Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I'm thrilled to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week Jody Sokolauer. She is the managing editor at Rethinking Schools. The website is rethinkingschools.org. She has taught middle school, high school, and adults. She is the editor of a terrific book, a new collection called Teaching About the Wars. Jody Sokolauer, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thanks.
Tell me what is rethinkingschools.org?
Well, Rethinking Schools is a magazine, a collection of books. We're a publisher, and then we have a website. So we've been around a little more than 25 years, and we publish articles and also books that are about integrating social justice issues into curriculum in K-12 education. And also we follow issues around social justice education and defending and transforming public schools in general.
So war and peace would be one issue, but a variety of social justice issues.
Yeah.
And what is the genesis of this new book, Teaching About the Wars?
Well, the first edition of this book developed in the period of time right after September 11th and then the invasion of Afghanistan and the invasion of Iraq. And what happened was immediately after September 11th, teachers all over the country were trying to figure out how are we going to talk about this in our classrooms, how are we going to cast this in a larger social justice framework, and how are we going to talk to our students about the prospect of war in Afghanistan, the prospect of war in Iraq, and then unfortunately when both of those turned into reality. So there was a collection that got put together originally that was first published in 2005 that was called Whose Wars? Teaching About the Iraq War and the War on Terrorism, that included a lot of the articles that had appeared in Rethinking Schools up to that point on what is terrorism, you know, how do you look at it in a broader context, what are different definitions of terrorism and who, in whose eyes is someone a terrorist? How do you mobilize opposition to war? What kind of anti-militarism organizing is going on in schools and communities? How do you prepare students to deal with recruitment? What's the history of the Middle East that you need to know to understand what's happening? All those issues were in that first book. And a bunch of people bought it and used it, and then we ran out, and for a while we were hoping that the wars would end and we wouldn't need to reprint it. But now that we seem to be in a cycle of endless war, on the one hand, there's a continuing and even growing need to teach what is happening in the Middle East and the U.S. relationship to it. And also there's just a huge silence about it. You know, this week is the 10th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq. So that means that, you know, like thinking about 2001, thinking about September 11th, students who are graduating from high school now were in first grade then. So their entire school life, their entire academic career up to now has been in the context of this endless war. It's become part of the wallpaper. You know, people don't talk about it. Teachers don't teach about it. So we felt like there was really a need to try to encourage everyone, parents, teachers, to reopen the conversation, to start teaching about it, to really bring it up as a live and critical issue in the classroom. And that's the context in which we decided to revise the book. We've put in new articles that have been written since the publication of the issue, and I wrote a new introduction. And, you know, it's by no means a complete compilation of curriculum. There are lots of holes in it, and it speaks to the need to really be teaching this, writing about it, talking to each other about it. So we hope we're reopening the conversation and that it will inspire teachers to write more articles, send them to Rethinking Schools, and
You mentioned right at the top asking the question, what is terrorism? And there's a discussion in the book of how that opens up critical thinking for students to ask them to define a term that they hear over and over again in the communication system of our government and our television networks, terrorism, war on terrorism. And it seems that often bad policies come out of muddled thinking, where people go along with something precisely because they don't know exactly what it's saying. Can you talk about how stopping and asking students to define the terms is helpful?
Well, what that article does, and I think it is a really helpful thing to teach students, is it asks students to really think for themselves what do they think should be in a definition of terrorism? And then it's got a bunch of scenarios with the names of countries obscured. You know, it's got fake names for the countries. And then it lays out some different scenarios of things that have actually happened. And it asks, well, is this terrorism? Is that terrorism? How do you decide what's terrorism? And is it only terrorism if it's done by individuals? States enact terrorism on each other? Is the United States ever responsible for acts in the world that could be defined as terrorism? So it's really asking students to look critically at that whole issue and not just see it as something that the U.S. government uses when either they want to, you know, have some kind of military activity somewhere else in the world, they want to throw people in prison without trial, they want to kill people with a drone. You know, What is terrorism, and what's the relationship between defining something as terrorism and due process, democracy, people's right to know and to debate public policy, all of those things?
Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant exercise to give historical events, something that occurred between two nations, but give the nations made up names, and so the students don't know that one of them might be the United States, and they might be concluding that one nation committed crimes and abuses, and then find out it was their own, and be forced to stop and think, would I have said this had I known that was my nation with my flag and war music playing? I imagine that some minds are opened up by these kinds of creative exercises.
That's the idea.
So how bad, I mean, is the problem largely that teachers avoid teaching war? It's not taught at all? They try to pretend indifference? Or is it that they teach it badly?
Well, it's not about teaching war, because the Revolutionary War gets taught, the Civil War gets taught, World War I gets taught. You know, there's a particularity about what's going on in the Middle East. And there are a number of different... And the thing is, for my values, it's most important to teach a war that we're in the middle of, as opposed to one that happened 300 years ago, because we want to involve students as active citizens, active participants in a democracy that's making decisions about what's the relationship of our country to the world. Yes. So in terms of the Middle East, I feel like there are a number of different factors. One is I think it's just not part of most curricula. And particularly in this era where there's more and more standardized testing and teachers, students are being evaluated more and more on the basis of standardized testing. And now teachers are being evaluated on the basis of the standardized tests of their students. That there's a real pressure to teach to the test, and the current world situation is not something that's on standardized tests. So that's one thing. Another is the situation in the Middle East is very complicated, and I think that many teachers don't know a lot about it because they didn't learn about it when they were in school, either K-12 or college and university. One particular area of interest for me personally is encouraging teachers to teach about Palestine and about the role of Israel in Palestine. And because I'm interested in that, I've been working with colleagues from the Middle East Children's Alliance on developing curriculum to teach about Palestine, and it's really forced me to realize how little I know about the history of the Middle East. And I don't think I'm unusual as a teacher in the United States in that way. You know, I used to teach seventh grade middle school, seventh grade humanities core, English and social studies. And at least in California, that's the medieval world. So I did have to learn about the Middle East and what was happening with Islam in the Middle Ages. So I know something about the Abbasid Empire and Iraq and stuff like that. But the Middle East is really glossed over or else invisible in most high school curriculum, or else it's a paragraph here, a paragraph there. And also things that come at the very end of the textbook hardly ever get covered. So it also suffers from, well, we were going to do it, but we just never got there. So one of the articles in the book is actually one that I wrote about working with world history students. And we were studying the world before 1500 and kind of as preparation to talking about the impact of colonial conquest. And what I chose to do, and this was back in 2009 when there was already plenty of silence about the war in Iraq, was I used as a model the students were going to do their own projects and pick a part of the world they were interested in, but I chose as the model Iraq during the Abbasid Empire. So we studied Iraq. We looked at what was going on at that period of time in terms of Iraq as a center of learning and a place where extraordinary math developments and scientific developments were happening, as well as astronomy, literature, all kinds of stuff. And then we looked at what was happening in Iraq then, during the war. And there's a book called Baghdad Burning that's a compilation of blogs by a young Iraqi woman who had been a computer programmer who worked outside of the home and stuff. And the war in Iraq forced her back into her home. She lost her job, and so she just blogged. And these blogs are just incredible in terms of you really get a sense of who she is as a person, but also what the impact of the early stages of the war in Iraq were on everyday people and on her family. So I paired that historical study with something that was happening right then that was very easy for the kids to relate to because she was a young woman blogging. So that was an example of how I tried to tie the two things together. And that's what we're that's what we're encouraging teachers to do, to think about how can I make this immediate for my students? How can I look at it?
We are speaking with Jody Sokolauer, who is the managing editor at RethinkingSchools.org, which has all kinds of useful materials, and the editor of a newly republished and updated book called Teaching About the Wars. Jody, I imagine that as digital communications improves, that we may be seeing more blogs and more first-person accounts from the nations that we are bombing and invading in real time more quickly, that this may become more of a factor and more of a tool that can be used in teaching. And there's also a chapter in the book that describes students video conferencing with other students in the Middle East. Can you?
In Palestine, yes, in that particular article.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that I don't know the names of the books offhand, but I know I've seen compilations of blogs from both Afghanistan and Palestine. And I think you're probably right that somebody who spent a little time on the internet looking for blogs would be able to find information coming directly out of, you know, places like Libya and Pakistan, Yemen, all places that have really been been impacted by the U.S. military strategy in the past few years, in addition to Iraq and Afghanistan, which everyone knows about.
I have to assume that the experience of speaking by video live to students in a foreign country has a major impact on young students' viewpoint as well.
I'm sure that it does. I'm sure that it does. Anything that means that students have a sense, you know, can connect up and relate on a one-to-one level with students in other parts of the world, I think is huge.
There are also, of course, now by this point, 10 years after Shock and Awe, and 12-something years after going into Afghanistan, textbooks that do include these wars, I think it's in your new introduction that you cite one, what I hope is a particularly horrendous example, one that is McDougall Little's Modern World History. How do these textbooks tend to present the current wars?
Well, they tend to present them kind of in the terms that the U.S. government describes them in. So, you know, they're very short descriptions, and they, you know, well, I can quote the summary from the book you're mentioning, Modern World History. It says, "Despite the coalition victory, much work remained in Iraq. With the help of U.S. officials, Iraqis began rebuilding their nation." Not really how I would describe the current situation in Iraq.
So what can a teacher do with a textbook like that?
Well, I think it's really helpful to look at those textbooks and then collect information, you know, from people in Iraq. What are people in Iraq saying about the current situation? What do peace activists say about the current situation? What statistics can you find about things like infant mortality and clean water and infectious diseases and what's happened to education or women's equality since the war started, and have kids look at them side by side and see what they think is really happening. A few years ago, I taught a class. This was also a world history class, and we were looking at the period, you know, they call it like the European land grab in Africa, the period from 1880 up through World War I, where European, in most U.S. textbooks, it describes it as Europe dividing up Africa, and never really does anything about the African resistance or how peoples in Africa saw that period of time. And I just went and found some African sources, and I didn't say a thing. The kids just looked at what the textbook said about that period of time, and then they looked at what African historians said, an African-American historian said about that period of time, and they just picked up a huge amount of stuff from, you know, how people were named, how leaders were referred to, what the silences were. So, you know, it's not about teaching kids to see things, you know, a different set of doctrine. It's about really pushing critical thinking and giving kids access to the materials to really think critically for themselves about who writes history, from what perspective, and what's a social justice lens? How do you look at events in the world and figure out, is this making the world a better place or is this making the world a more dangerous place? Who's gaining in this situation? Who's losing? What's happening to children? What's happening to old people? You know, what's happening to the land? What are the environmental and ecological implications? All of those kind of things. I wanted to mention one other thing that's in the book that I think is really important. That's okay?
Sure.
Which is there's an article in the back that Bill Bigelow wrote that's about helping students look at recruitment literature and the form that you have to fill out if you're being recruited into the military. And I think I think that's a subject that it's really important for high school teachers to take on with their students. And, you know, it's a delicate subject because by now, many, many students have family members who have fought in those wars, who were perhaps killed or injured in those wars. But it's still something that you need to support students in looking at critically. Are there recruiters on their campuses? Are there recruiters in their neighborhoods? What are they promising students? Who is most vulnerable to being recruited in terms of other options or ways of going to college or finding jobs? What's the relationship between what recruiters, military recruiters, promise you and what is true? What are your legal rights once you have gone to a recruitment office and signed some papers? And I think all that stuff is, you know, just as high school teachers have a responsibility to make sure that students leave with an understanding of, I don't know, credit card debt. You know, what they really need to know what the dangers of recruiting offices are.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's an absolutely critical, in fact, a life and death lesson.
Absolutely.
I think the single point that struck me the strongest in the whole book was in a chapter by a teacher named Jessica Klonsky, who showed her students a news segment, a documentary produced by Al Jazeera, the network from Qatar. And some of the students, she wrote, had not previously been aware that anyone other than soldiers died in wars. Now, by my calculation, the deaths of the American soldiers in Iraq, which are the only deaths you read about, for the most part, in lists of the dead in U.S. newspapers, amount to 0.3% of the deaths. If that's right...
Oh, my God, I didn't realize it was that bad. It makes sense.
Well,
horrifying statistic, isn't it?
If you're looking at 1.4 million dead above and beyond the death rate that existed in 2003, which was not good, mm-hmm. and you're looking at almost 5,000 U.S. troops, then it's about 0.3%. And so 99.7% is missing from those students' understanding. And of course, every other major war since World War II, civilians have been the majority of the deaths, not just some fraction or minority of the deaths. So it seems to me there are enormous gaps to be filled in students' understanding when they come into the classroom, if that's what teachers are finding.
Yeah, I think that's really true. You know, what's interesting to me about that is I think one of the huge, huge influences in the struggle against the war in Vietnam, I mean, the war in Vietnam was very different in many ways. But one of the differences was that the war was really on TV screens every night, and we really saw civilians being killed. You know, you saw villages going up in flames, and you saw children dying. And the government and the media have been quite successful in these current wars in the Middle East in keeping those images off of TV and out of the newspaper. You know, during the Bush administration, they weren't even allowed to show caskets coming back. So that it's not a wonder that students have no idea what's happening. But you know that film Control Room, which is about
right, that was the one that she
yeah
that she
media
showed
coverage
them.
In Iraq and has a lot about Al Jazeera in it, is really a good film.
I was struck by a comment, I'm not sure if it was you or one of the other authors in this book, made about the practice of staying indifferent and quote-unquote objective, and that in fact teachers end up teaching students to be indifferent to major policy decisions, major events in the world, that in fact you have to show students what it is to have a point of view. That's a pretty controversial statement, isn't it?
Well, everything is political, right? If you say nothing, that's a point of view. You know, it's not like silence is neutral.
Right.
Silence is a statement. So it's actually much more honest teaching to say, okay, let's look at this situation. This is my perspective, but let's look at what different people are saying about this and decide how we want to evaluate it. And I'm really interested in what you think, and really freeing the discussion up in the classroom. You know, when September 11th happened, I was teaching ninth grade, and it was right in the fall. I was teaching a social science class, and we'd been in session about 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And the initial discussions in the classroom were extraordinary. I was teaching five classes, and the discussions were all quite similar. And students were saying, oh, my God, this is about a part of the world that we really don't know anything about. We really need to understand what's happening there. And what are we doing? Why are people so angry at us? What are we doing that people are so angry at us? Those are really good questions.
Yeah, forbidden questions for adults if they want to be employed by U.S. television networks, but questions that come from children, from
right.
young people.
I was really impressed. And then over time, you could see how the media began to have an impact on them. And that question of why would people be angry at us? What can we use it, which is not to excuse September 11th, which I do think was a terrorist attack. You know, I don't believe in attacking civilians, no matter under any circumstance.
Well, I hope most people agree with you on that.
but asking why would people be so angry at the United States is a great opening to a social, to what could have been a very social justice and democratic approach to how are we going to deal with this crisis, both among our own people and internationally. And, you know, if the students in my class had been running the country, I think we'd be in a lot better shape today than we are.
Well, it may be that some years from now, former students in your class or a class taught by one of the other great authors of this book about teaching will be running the country, if we still have a country. We've been speaking with Jody Sokolauer. She is the managing editor at Rethinking Schools. You can go to rethinkingschools.org, and Teaching About the Wars is the new book that I highly recommend getting, reading, sharing, and using. Jody, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.